You're tuned to the Texas Standard. Sometime in the 1990s, concerns about rising crime rates in America's urban centers began to focus on Los Angeles as a kind of ground zero. Stories about the Bloods and the Crips and the like often overlooked a more complicated history that preceded events on the West Coast by several decades, though foreshadowing many of the underlying issues of poverty and social isolation. Joining us now is Mike Tapia. He is associate professor in the Department of Criminal Justice at New Mexico State University, and he is the author of the new book, Gangs of the El Paso-Juarez Borderland. It's a unique history that reflects diverse subcultures on both sides of the border and the law. Professor Tapia, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
This is your second book about gangs in Texas, as I understand it. What is it about this subject matter? I think the first one had to do with San Antonio, if I'm not mistaken. What is it about this subject matter that draws you in so closely?
It's pure serendipity. I mean, you know, we all kind of follow our life paths and in terms of, you know, how we get into the professions that we do. And yeah, it's attributed in part to where I grew up, you know, kind of high poverty area of El Paso's Lower Valley. And in a historic community named Isleta. So I was part of that milieu, you know, that was the environment we grew up in. My buddies in baseball, you know, were also cholos or, you know, gangbangers or whatever. And, you know, it was just kind of part and parcel of the landscape at that point. And then as luck would have it, I guess, upon graduating from university at St. Mary's in San Antonio, as a political science major, no less, so not trained for that type of work. But my first job was just as a gang intervention social worker.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's how I kind of got my entry to that whole world.
Well, I find that really pretty fascinating considering how much there's a certain, well, you write about this, there's a certain style that is part of the look of gangs, certainly from the 1920s to roughly the 1950s, that is known among people of letters in the humanities as very, very identifiable. I suppose you could call it the Zoot Suit style, maybe. That, I mean, this made huge ripples across the United States at one point.
Right. It was a, you know, really historic period that had a lot to do with, I guess, a form of resistance that was manifested in style of dress, you know, kind of street type attitude, you know, street savvy youth from the borderland region. And its origin, you know, is really genuinely here on the El Paso Juarez borderland. It's known as the Pachuco style, right?
Right.
And, you know, in different folks in cultural studies and ethnic studies will attribute it to, you know, offshoots from different region. But I'm convinced, you know, that it is, you know, really genuinely related to the border. And this is where it got its start. And then it was mimicked, you know, in different places. It kind of culturally transferred amongst lower class working boys, Mexican-American boys in the Southwest.
These were the early barrio gangs of El Paso and Juarez, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's, I guess, a good, fair way to put it.
What made them gangs? I mean, there wasn't necessarily a sort of criminological aspect to some of these gangs, right?
That's right, yeah, and that's why I hesitate, you know, to qualify it by saying, you know, these were the first gangs, right? I mean, you know, this was really, like I said, kind of a subcultural, you know, resistance of youth of that era, you know, Mexican-American youth or Chicano youth in particular. And yeah, I mean, you know, I guess they kind of they had a bad boy image and stuff like that. So yeah, gangs was, I guess, a much more benign term, and even their form was much different than from what, you know, what we know today, right?
So where did you start to see the element, or when did law enforcement, I suppose, was the first to really identify this as a phenomenology? I mean, when did this start to appear, and why? What were the factors here?
After it transferred, there's a real, you know, lengthy historic migration stream, you know, from El Paso to L.A. And so there's that. This subculture kind of transferred in that current. So I dug up some archives where LAPD detectives assumed, you know, because they were seeing the style in El Paso and LA and all points in between, you know, Phoenix, Tucson, what have you, right? And so they assume this is a nationwide federation of, bad kids, right, who dress in these zoot suits and stuff. But you know, it was relative to today's, you know, kind of crime. And this is just like street corner mischief and, you know, stuff like that. So that's kind of, I think, where it got its, you know, the whole conflict with police and stuff like that.
What is that? Because it wasn't all criminal, of course. This was about ownership. It was about a sense of community, too.
It was, and that's one way that it's one thing I've really learned about studying this subculture over time, is because that was a big impetus for even, you know, embarking on these projects, just to see how much has this thing really changed. You know, does it in any way resemble that more benign street corner mischievous unsupervised group milling about, you know? And no, it really has changed over time. It's become a lot more insidious. It's become, you know, something tied up in drugs and violence. And so it really has morphed over time.
I'm just curious about whether there's a geographical sort of component here, because it's often, you know, people often refer to the sister cities, right? But there's also a competing narrative that you write about as well, and that is the undeniable otherness, too, of Juarez and El Paso.
Yes, it is such a stark contrast between El Paso and Juarez. It's in certain ways, right? And just in terms of the first meets third world contrast, in terms of the poverty and everything on the south of the border, and then, you know, some of the affluence that you see literally right across the border. But yeah, are they sister cities? That's up for debate. That's one of the central themes of the book, because the violence, you know, the gang situation in Juarez is like just of a whole other type than what we're talking about with, the things I've studied on the Texas side.
What do you think that understanding the gangs of this borderland can teach us about who we are and about how we can live better together, I suppose you could say?
Well, gangs are, whether folks like to believe it or not, a reflection of the community, of some part of the community. You know, it says something about how we're willing to empower our poor or not, or leave those their communities to deteriorate, and where our priorities are as a society in terms of expenditures, public expenditures on education or housing or whatever, to improve certain conditions for poor populations. And so, yeah, gangs, as we all know, just thrive in those contexts. And as long as we as a society are, you know, going to continue to turn a blind eye to that, well, then we've only got ourselves to blame for this social problem called gangs, right?
It's a thought-provoking book that examines gang history in an important region in the United States and certainly in Texas, Gangs of the El Paso Juarez Borderland. The author is Mike Tapia. He is Associate Professor of Criminal Justice at New Mexico State University. Professor, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us on the Texas Standard.
Thanks, Dave. It was great.